welcome to the latest edition, the first of this year, for the Live at the Brentwood podcast. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you from the Brentwood in Saratoga Springs. If you don't know about this place, you should. If you're somebody who's planning on coming up to Saratoga this summer, maybe you're one of the horse owners who has the opportunity to get here. You're looking for a place to say, this is the place I would recommend above all others. It's very cool. There's that going for it. I also love the fact that they're doing everything in a very safe manner. There's no shared space here. Everything's contactless. My mom came to Saratoga to visit, who is a cancer survivor and in a high-risk category. I had no concerns at all about her staying here. Definitely a place to check out if you're coming to town. It is a gorgeous Sunday morning here. I've got my Bloody Mary in hand, my first Saratoga Bloody Mary of the season. It's delicious. We might have some news next week on a sponsor for the Bloody Mary. We're working on that. Always working on things up here at Saratoga. But it's a beautiful day. We're going to be talking about these races and chatting a little bit in general. And here with me is my good friend who I've known for too many years. We've got a traffic accident. We've got a traffic accident here at the corner of Nelson and Gridley. My good buddy, you know him from television. You know him from his work all over the place. When it comes to horse racing, whether it was at the Brooklyn Backstretch blog, whether it was his various roles at Horse Player Now, Capital OTB right here in Saratoga. He's Brian Natto. Brian, how are you?
I'm great, Pete. We have some drama here on a Sunday morning. We literally just had a live traffic accident about 27 feet away from us. That's a thing. That happened. So had nothing to do with your great Bloody Mary either, but that just happened. So as I'm turning my head to see exactly what's going on, we have some drama here on a Sunday morning in Saratoga.
I hope my laughing isn't cruel. It sounded fender bendery, not like anyone is hurt. Does that sound like an accurate assessment? Let's get some live reporting on the scene.
Yeah, there's no punches being thrown quite yet, but it could be in the works, so we'll see.
Some heated discussions here. That's a very unusual thing. I don't want people to think there are traffic accidents here all the time. It is another cool thing about this, though, is we are between the track and the barn. So just a few minutes ago, and maybe again a little bit later, you do hear the clippity-clop of hooves as, I don't even know, do you know whose barns are down there?
I just saw Jimmy Bond actually go by in the golf cart or what have you. So he's at the end of, is this Gridley, I believe, or something? He's at the end. So I think, I don't know if he's here this summer, but I know Kenny McPeak used this street as well. He's probably not here in the full capacity this summer, but I know Jimmy Bond, if you follow that road down to the left, he's down there at the end.
We will get to these races in just a few minutes. If you're in a super hurry, go to about the 15-minute mark, and we'll start handicapping. But while I have the chance to chat with Brian in such a loosey-goosey fashion, I'm going to take advantage of it. I'm going to start just with pure self-indulgence, though, by telling Brian and the listeners about, speaking of adventures, the adventure Susan and I had last night on the way back from the Malta Drive-In. Have you ever been to the Malta Drive-In?
Many, many times with many, many cocktails in hand. The Malta Drive-In is a lot of fun. Down going south on Route 9. I certainly haven't been in this day and age we're living in, but yeah, I've spent some nights there. It's a lot of fun, actually.
Last night was tremendous. There was a double feature. I've had the Malta Drive-In. They are not a sponsor, by the way, though I kind of want to make them one just so we can, you know.
Why not?
Get free movies and whatnot. We'll get on that. If anybody knows anybody at the Malta Drive-In. They have their own little bespoke radio station, too. And I had this fantasy about doing an in-the-money takeover where I get to be the DJ on the little radio station. Do you think they let me do that?
That I was not aware of, but I would think you can probably, knowing you as long as I have, finagle your way into some way, shape, or form in there.
Are you suggesting that I'm a bit of a hustler, Brian? Is that the implication?
Just maybe.
I may resemble that remark, but so we go down there. It's been in my head because on the way to the Saratoga Ninja Lab, we'll give shout-outs to various friends. It's between where we are in Saratoga and the Ninja Lab, where Perrin has been loving camp for the last couple of weeks, another place doing things in a very safe way that makes me feel good about life. And then there's also in that same industrial park, and these guys also, not sponsors, probably should be, what are they called? Is it Unified Brewing? Anyway, they're all right, too. We'll get to our other brewery that's actually a sponsor a little bit later in the show. But anyway, we go there. We have a great night. It's a Grease and American Graffiti double feature,
okay,
which is bizarre, but at the same time, like, completely works. These, like, wacky, nostalgic movies.
for the late 50s, early 60s. Anyway, it was a fabulous time. We had a great night out. On the way home, you know, as you pointed out, part of what's fun about the drive-in is it was Alamo Drafthouse, also not a sponsor, before there was Alamo Drafthouse. The idea that you go and you can bring your picnic and set up your camping chairs and have a good time. Well, of course, we indulged in that. And, you know, Susan had her can of rosé and I had my flask of scotch. And we had a good time. Not driving while doing that, but as we're driving back from Saratoga, there is an empty, you know, you can't, it's, I guess you theoretically can, but it's a bit of a pain in the butt to leave your junk there. So we took our stuff with us in the, we have a garbage bag in the car, but there's basically two pretty obvious alcohol sources. Mm-hmm. And that we see the, it's so appropriate after a movie, American Graffiti, in which there is a car getting pulled over because the not the taillight is out, but the light that lights up the license plate is out. Anyway, that's a little detail that will come up in the story very shortly. We see the cop behind us, and, you know, we weren't speeding. It was, we thought we were being completely safe. We get pulled over on 9 on the way in, and I'm just, like, thinking to myself, I know the car, our inspection has expired, and I haven't had a chance to go and deal with that yet.
Right.
And we have these empty alcohol cans, and there's no chance that Susan, who was driving, would have blown anything that was a problem on the alcoholometer or whatever it's called. But it's stressful, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, this is going to be bad. Is it going to be get a ticket bad, or is it going to be a Benny South Street night in the drunk tank bad? And the cop could not have been nicer. And did not inquire about, you know, just where are you coming from, where are you going, and we're waiting for the alcohol question.
Where are your pants? Yeah. Anything like that?
It wasn't that type of drive-in trip, though. I think a few years ago that could have happened. In the end, it's just so bizarre because I barely even heard of this. She pulled us over because the light that's supposed to illuminate our license plate, just like in American Graffiti, was out. And she said, just please get that fixed. Go on your merry way. I felt like I'd robbed a bank, Brian, getting out of there with that
little... I mean, I guess kudos to the police for doing their job. That seems a little extreme, but I guess all's well that ends well. I believe I've been pulled over from a Malta drive-in on the way home myself many, many moons ago. What physical graffiti? Is that like Harrison Ford's first movie or something like that? Is that...
Well, Physical Graffiti is a Led Zeppelin album.
American Graffiti, yeah, excuse me. Is that the claim to fame there?
If it's not his first, it's one of his first. He gets to play the great 2D bad guy, Bob Falfa. I've had this on, you know, it was only last night I saw it, so it makes sense it's on my mind. But it's on my mind enough, also famous as not George Lucas's first, but probably his second feature.
Oh, maybe that's what I was thinking of, too. Is it kind of like the Outsiders of the 60s and 70s? They have a young, up-and-coming cast that...
100%. Okay. There's absolutely, there are definitely plenty of parallels there. I think I'm going to write about it. I was noticing all these weird tie-ins to Star Wars, and I think I might write a little essay about it for the blog. But anyway, that was my last night. How is your meet going so far?
I thought you were going to ask about my last night.
And well, we can do that, too.
That wouldn't have filled up a lot of time. That's a mystery.
Studying form?
Studying form, right. Watching Edwin Diaz blow another save for the Mets and then finishing my 23rd Miller Lite to drown my sorrows. The meet's been a struggle. There's no doubt about it. There's been about 3 or 4 races. This actually dates back to closing day at Belmont. Where there's been 3 or 4 spots where I've had several horses and only one horse can beat me, and every single time said horse has beaten me. Like, you can't make it up. And a few of the times, it's like that particular horse was never, ever, ever going to lose, like even 2 jumps out of the gate. So it's been frustrating. You know how I play, a lot of pick fives and things like that. So you have to, you talked about this on my show on Capital OTB on Saturdays at the Spa last week. You're going to have a lot of streaks. You're going to have a lot of offers. It does only take one in this game when you're playing like that. That's the beauty of it. But it doesn't mean it's easy to go through these extended dry spells and not hit, or, you know, and then the other thing is too, if you're not really playing race to race as opposed to playing horizontals, you know, a horse you might have had on top that pays 4 or 5 to 1 and you kind of get mad at that. But you know, it's a 40-day grind, it's a marathon, it's no longer a sprint. And as a gambler, as a handicapper, you know, you have to be cognizant of that and realize it's gonna, as you said it last week, you know, put the work in, put the proper time in, do it right, and it will come back around. You have to trust the process.
Trusting the process is a great way to describe it, and I like that very much. Let's talk a little bit about your horse player origin story, because I realize I don't even fully know it. I feel like I'm assuming it was when you started working for the special that we would have first met. I can't remember. Yeah. Maybe you know the year.
I think the year was 2006.
Okay, so you were not there in the first
five or
six.
No, I was not there the first few years. I started with, well, you know what? I think it was 2007. I started with Naira in 2006. And then the following year, got hooked up with Sean and Joe and moved. I think I first met you at Sean's house in what turned out to be Pennsylvania, I think, even though I was living in Delaware. Sean Clancy, our buddy, and kind of the father of the Saratoga Special with his brother Joe. Sean lived in a funky part of Union?
Landenburg, Pennsylvania. Beautiful old house in Landenburg, Pennsylvania.
Where, like, Delaware and Maryland is, like, 2 minutes away. It's kind of like the nexus of the universe, apparently, to quote Seinfeld. But, yeah, it was really weird. And then you would drive to Fair Hill, which is probably... I lived in Wilmington and drove to Fair Hill and worked. I was an office worker, worked for those guys.
So you worked for them down there before any summers up here? Is that right?
I think that is right. I think what happened was, well, it's been so long ago and so many summers ago up here. As you know, it's not the 40 days, it's the 40 nights up here. I'm trying to think how that all shook out. If it wasn't, it was the summer after I went down there and lived down there, worked in the office in Fair Hill, which is a beautiful, tiny little town. It's Elkton is where their office is, and it's right on the – so it's Elkton, Maryland, but the University of Delaware in Newark is a mile down the road. It's just a weird – but, yeah, it's a cool place down there.
But I want to go back farther than that because we've never really talked about it. How growing up in this general part of the world, I can only assume Saratoga's part of it. What are your earliest memories of coming here? How did you get into racing?
Never came here as a young kid. Grew up 15 minutes away, and all my friends would come up with their dads on the weekend and stuff. And I don't know if I was playing baseball, but even to this day, since I've been doing this now for over 15 years, I still think we always joke my parents have probably been here 6 or 7 times in their life. I don't think my dad would know the difference between a win bet and an exacta box. It's just not their thing. So I had an uncle that was a big horse player, but what really did it for me was as a freshman at SUNY Oswego, I had a friend, and we played the Kentucky Derby one year, and had $2 or $4 to win on Thunder Gulch at 26-1. And at SUNY Oswego, that buys a lot of draft beer,
a lot of Genesee.
Yeah, exactly. So I was kind of hooked. That was May of 1995, and then of course, you know, summer school was over, came back here, and then it was all about the track ever since. So that's pretty much my story. And then as a gambler that said, you know what, maybe I want a little bit more out of this. I you're kind of the same way. I've never really had a real job. I never could have a real job. I would just jump off my balcony if it came to that. So here we are, X years later.
Oh my goodness, couple of rounders. It's not too inaccurate. It's very. The straight lifestyle, I did live it for a while. I had a job from 1994 to 2003, doing racing as often as possible. Okay. But since then, it's been freelance and this sort of my own slightly saner version of the racetracker's itinerant lifestyle. Is that similar?
Yeah, I mean, you know how it is. It's nice to be able to call your own shots, so to speak, and work from home or get up here for the summer and do that kind of thing. It's the flexibleness, you know, have Wi-Fi, will travel kind of thing. You know, you can go anywhere and do what you want.
at some point, we do need to do a longer JK plus one style chat into everything. Go through your most painful memories as a Mets fan. We'll do that whole that we can have that therapy session back and forth. But well, we got a lot of people listening to this. They're playing Saratoga today, this Sunday. And I think we should dive in to this card, maybe give people a few thoughts on today's late pick five. It starts off in race number six. We've got a three-year-old allowance going a mile on the inner turf. How are you going to get things started in this one?
Yeah, like a lot of the turf races up here, no shock, the race goes through Chad Brown. He's got two in here. He's got the bookends. He's inside and he's outside with Jazik and Cost Benefit. And I think both of them have to be used as A's, but I also think that neither of them has to win. So I've got this 3-1-11, Master of the Obvious with Logic and Reason, who had a trip last time. You know, you see the comment line there, steadied off heels. For Christophe Clément. So you're not getting 6-1 here. You might get 5-2 for that matter, because Christophe just pretty much wins everything that he's sending out. The barn is white hot, but this gal added Lasix last time, goes second off the long layoff, is supposed to run better here. I like being drawn inside on this inner turf course going a tricky mile. It's not a trip they run too often. So it can be a little tricky. I put Logic and Reason on top. She's tactical enough to sit the trip in here. I kind of like Jazik a little better than Cost Benefit for a couple different reasons. She got the prep out of the way last time, and she's run well against winners. And then most importantly, she's drawn perfectly here. Whereas you go outside and you look at Cost Benefit, who could be any kind, but the post is a problem. Don't forget now we're going a two-turn trip now, and she's outside in a race where there might be some other speed too. So I kind of think, especially at a short number, you have to use her. But if you just look at this race on paper, there's a lot going against her. And again, like she's also really no faster than anyone else in here, regardless of what kind of figures you use. So I would use her, but I'm using her defensively.
I feel like you didn't leave much meat on the bone there. After Cost Benefit's first race, I would have thought I would be backing next time. But for all the reasons you said, I ended up putting second to Logic and Reason. I was hoping, and you've made a good case for Jazik, and I'm reconsidering, but I was hoping to try to get out just 3-11 here. But we'll see what happens. I don't need to recap the cases you already eloquently made for those runners. I think we should just move it right along to race number seven. We've got a 3 and up allowance going 5.5 on the turf today, and this was a race where and maybe this is because for this little ADW homework I'm doing, I'm picking three horses a race, and so my brain is starting to think in terms of three horses a race. But I was hoping to get away with Fast Getaway, just very obvious, I thought, based on form and figures in a forward trip. Morning Breeze, another I thought might trip out and fits on numbers. And then Cryogenic, who has some really impressive looking company lines, has really run into a few in the allowance ranks, and I thought fit here. So I was looking at 8, 6, and 9 for this second leg, but very curious to get your thoughts.
Yeah, right, me too. 8, 9, 6 is my actual order, but it's tough to get by those three for all the reasons you mentioned. They're the best on paper. They are supposed to trip out as well. They're proven. The rest of them that we did mention aren't much either. The one horse I will throw out there that I was reconsidering this morning is American Mandate. I wouldn't want a short number on him. 3 seems a bit drastic, but if you look at his one turf race, it was on yielding ground. It was a good second. It was kind of a slow second, but it was a good second. He's yet to run on fast, hard turf, which he'll certainly get here. I'm going to put him as a B in here, because I think if nothing else, he's got a little upside, and we already know what Morning Breeze, Fast Getaway, and Cryogenic can and can't do. And they're the three most likely winners, but I'll try to sneak someone else in there, at least as a backup.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. I know what you're saying. When the best horses, you also kind of know how good they are. It's nice to try to look for something that's maybe a little bit more progressive. Let's talk about race number 8, allowance ranks once again, but this time on the dirt. We're going 1.5 miles in a race that I think is going to have a very hot favorite. It's going to be tough to beat. I am going to try to sneak some other stuff in there, but we'll start with you. Is Happy Saver for you, Brian, one to be for or against?
Well, I'm going to try to sneak a lot in, Pete. I mean, I've got this 7-2, 6-3-5, and I'm going to use all of them in some way, shape, or form. So we'll talk about Happy Saver. Clearly the horse to beat. Looked really good It was Belmont Day for Todd and the Wertheimer brothers, and they breed good horses, and this looks like another one. And he really was very, very impressive on debut, but, you know, as handicappers, as gamblers, we try to pick these things apart, and he's a very short price today, and nobody else ran that day in his race. He goes from 7 to 9, and as you know, this is a very demanding 9 furlong, 2-turn trip up here. So this might be a horse that's going places for Todd, but there are others in here with a license to run well. I'm very interested in Summer Kid, who I picked on top for Delgado. He brought that Caracaro up here, almost won the Curl, and hell, he might win the, you know, he's a major player in the Travers. For me, he's a lightly raced young horse. This is a kind of horse that looks very similar to Caracaro. He got the comeback out of the way last time. He does face winners today. He is outside, but there's tactical speed here. Gaffalione will put him in the race early. He's certainly bred to absolutely love this trip in another turn. He's by Lemon Drop Kid, out of a Summer Bird mare. So there is pedigree, distance pedigree, all sorts of different ways here. He looks like a horse that is certainly on the improve. And by the way, he ran very fast in winning last time. So and more importantly, he might be 5, 6, 7, 8 times the price of Happy Saver. I'll talk quickly about Basquiat for Chad. I mean, he certainly looks like he's improving, and he comes out of that Tap It to Win Mystic Guide Country Grammar race, and Country Grammar came back to win the Curl, and I like Mystic Guide a lot, so it's a very live race. High Amplitude to me is in the mix as well for Chad. Don't sleep on Beau Luminaire either for Brissette, coming off a 2-turn race at Churchill Downs. So, Pete, we're going to have a horse that might be odds on, and I just talked about 4 horses I think can beat him. So
that makes sense. I was having trouble seeing past the figure and the trip. I thought that for Happy Saver the 9 could be a benefit in terms of being able to control things out front, but for all the reasons you said, wasn't going to trust. And you talked about the two that I was going to talk about behind Happy Saver. That's the 6 Basquiat, who you know, you're right, that I was going to say had no excuse for the last race, but I think the fact that it was such a live race maybe is an excuse in and of itself. And I thought the first race was very good, and I also just love, this is an angle that, you know, I've used up here for years, 5 good-looking local works with Country Grammar working like head-and-head with a horse that we know is really good. I think we're going to see better from Basquiat today. And then Summer Kid, I don't have much to add. Just that figure in Florida, very strong and going to be a good price. So I'm going to mess around with 2, 6, and 7. I'll press the 2 enough to feel like I'm not losing equity if that one wins. Right. Sometimes when I have a shorty but I want backups, the way I'll do it is I'll keep the coverage with horses like Basquiat and Summer Kid, but I may have them for the minimum amount of the pick, and I may have a $2 pick with Happy Saver, just so I feel like, I hate that feeling of where you've hit it but you still feel like you've lost, you know that one?
Yeah, absolutely, and I agree so far with what we've discussed, and we seem to be kind of on the same page of what we've gone through so far. It's right now it's shaping up as a main ticket that you are going to be able to punch 1 or 2 or 3 times to get some added equity if he should win, because, you know, we're looking like at a 2x3x2 kind of sequence where, you know, you might have an $18 ticket for 50 cents and you punch it 3 or 4 times. And that's, as you said, that's how, if the strong favorite does win, if he lives up to the hype, then you don't feel like you spread equally and you're losing equity.
Let's talk about race number 9. It's the Grade 2 Bernard Baruch going a mile, and it's a 16th, isn't it? Mile and a 16th on the inner turf. And this race, I kept going back and forth. I feel like you could make some case for every horse in the race. I'm a huge fan of Good Governance, but couldn't go that way in the end. Ended up on number 3, Some Like It Hot Brown. A classy horse who I feel like is equally good on turf and synth, and I thought would get a good trip up near the pace. As much as I like Good Governance and think he could get a good trip, I can make you a case that the last race didn't fully capture his ability based on how easy it was. He just didn't really get out of a canter. But very hard to take a horse who's going to be the favorite who doesn't have an edge on numbers for someone as numbers-oriented as me. And then I was also looking at Halliday just based on the fast-paced figures early to maybe be able to get loose and control it. I was going to try to mess around with those 3 numbers, 3, 2, and 6, but I'm really curious to hear what you have to say on this one, because, again, I feel like you could make cases for the others as well.
Yeah, and I'm going to make a case for Olympico, who's the other Chad, and who is up against it here. He wants longer, and But, you know, the only time he's run poorly in this country was actually in this race last year. And I think people are going to look at it and they're going to see the mile and a 16th and, you know, that he wants longer. But it was a very, very boggy turf course that day. And he just didn't fire. And I'm going to give him a little bit of a pass. It's also easier to give passes when you're a better price than, you know, when you're the fourth choice in a six-horse field. So I think that's important as well. It's not like I'm giving him a pass as the 2-to-1 favorite. So there's value here. I think there's going to be pace, Pete, which is probably idiotic of me to say in the year 2020, because that just doesn't happen. But I do think there's going to be pace in here because you mentioned some like it, Hot Brown. He's definitely going. Halliday, especially with Luis Saez from the outside, is certainly not giving anything away. Mr. Dumas is kind of the rank outsider. He was just chasing 46-2 last time. So in good governance is, you know, he was right off of it too. Now they went slow. You mentioned him, and listen, yeah, he's an A. You have to use him, but he really does take all the worst of it here, especially from a gambling perspective. He's going to be a short price with, as you mentioned, no edge on paper. By the way, he's facing older graded stakes folks. These are serious horses today. This isn't just the grade three Saranac here, you know, and he beat one ex-foes last time. So it's a confident move by Chad because I'm sure they're writing, you know, 62 optional claimers, a dime a dozen up here on the turf. So it is a confident move, but, you know, it wouldn't shock me at all if he answers the bell here, but he's really up against it in terms of value, in terms of experience, and honestly, in terms of figures on paper too. He really has no edge.
Yeah, I definitely can make the case in either direction, and I'm with you. This is the kind of horse that I am not going to get beat by, but I'm not going to press the way I thought I was going to press based on what I thought when they crossed the wire the last time. Let's move on to our nightcap. We've got three and up maiden claiming 40,000 going a mile and a 16th on the turf. Brian, how are we going to get paid?
Well, I like a horse in here, Pete. Prince of Caps is very interesting to me, which should be a nice number. The post is not ideal. I understand that. But, you know, he came back for Michelle Nevin, and he's got kind of one of the angles I like a lot in racing. And that's like horses that don't run an inch on a particular surface. Now, this is one didn't run an inch on dirt. He gets to the turf. He blows way up at a huge number. And the public typically thinks, that was just a fluke. So you come back. He was 43-1 last time. Now, he's sure as heck not going to be that today. But he's going to be a decent price because the public's going to look at that and they're going to kind of view it as a fluke a little bit. They're going to see that 43-1. I think I can get 8-1 on that day. Winning factor, two starts with Dave Donk, has turned into a new horse. He came back up here last week and upset an odds-on favorite, and he did it well. This guy's a first-time gelding with the proper, we can kind of believe the spacing and the timing. It's telling me 6:20 he was gelded, so that's got, you know, that's about 5 weeks. I can deal with that. And Manny Franco on the outside with a tactical horse, he should put him in the race early. And then you look at the rest of these, you know, Turn of Events is probably the horse to be on the drop for Maker. Economic Policy for Chad certainly hits hard, but you know, you look at this group and Seize the Day down inside for First Time Brissette. You look at, I don't know, are we supposed to be scared by any of these horses? I certainly don't think so.
I think you make a great case for Prince of Caps, who I kind of slept on, if I'm being honest, because it has two angles that I love. The first time gelding, the big improve on the new surface that they actually go forward instead of the regression that people expect, and then also made a move into kind of a hot pace last time. Maybe a more efficient run gets the job there. So I should have had the 11 among my numbers. I went ahead and put Seize the Day on top, though. I just looking at pace and speed figures. And I was hoping, I don't know, what's this horse on the morning line?
Five to two.
That's short enough, really. I do think a likely winner from the inside draw. And the switch from Baffert to Brissette on turf, I thought was maybe going to help with the price, and it isn't a negative on turf.
Yeah, it might scare some people off. You're right, and it takes the big MSW drop from there. And I would think you have it right. This horse is supposed to be in front here with an aggressive ride from Junior Alvarado. And you want to be inside and in front is never a bad place to be on a hard, fast turf course. And I would think that's the trip he pulls today.
So I'm thinking now to make this 1, 10, 11. And then the other I'm going to use is the 9 with that meaningful drop. And the other thing about the 9, Glynn County, pet angle of mine as well. When you factor in expected improvement for the time the horse has been away from the track, the numbers are right there. And that one, 5-1 on the morning line. I'm going to try to use those four and get out and hit this pick five today.
Yeah, I think he's a B. He gets a pretty major trainer change to our friend Jonathan Thomas. And no disrespect for Jimmy Toner, but I actually saw him in the form the other day. He's 0-17 on the year. I couldn't believe it. Jimmy has trained a lot of good horses, but this is a positive trainer move. When you look at the stats, it's a 21-horse sample, but he's 38% going from special weights to maiden claimers. He's strong, almost 25% off this extended layoff. And you're right. You look at these figures in December, September, and August of the two-year-old season, and you kind of do the point and a half a month or so and extrapolate him out. He fits nicely with this group.
Yeah, Jonathan does a great job. It is funny. I mean, I can't think. I mean, Jimmy Toner to me is just watching his body of work over the years. He's so, so good. And I wish he had the stock to be able to show what he's capable of on a more regular basis. Obviously, we have a lot of friends on the training side, and I don't want to play favorites, but that's a guy whose skill, and there's many of them really, but a guy whose skill clearly outstrips the numbers. But nothing wrong with Jonathan Thomas, obviously. And I think that is a telling stat, right? Because some trainers are in positions where they have horses that are probably of the maiden claimer level, but because of various economic factors might have to run those horses over their heads. When you see a trainer who's dropping and that successfully, it just tells me this isn't somebody who's just giving away horses that can't win, and it's not somebody who's running horses over their head. He's running horses where they belong, and you can trust him and bet with a little extra confidence based on that.
Yeah, it's the proper placement, and it's like you look at Chad. Now, Chad's 42% with maiden special weights and maiden claimers here, but with Chad, it's more we got to get this horse out of the barn. There's a better one taking the stall. So I don't care if I lose him, and maybe he doesn't even figure. He doesn't really care. Whereas Jonathan, a guy with a smaller stable with big numbers, he's putting them in the competitive spots that they should be. Because this it's whereas Chad's got 200 horses, he doesn't care if he loses one. Well, this is a little bit different scenario with a Jonathan Thomas who might not have that kind of robust stable, and the stats belie it here because he's putting horses in spots where that's where they belong.
Nobody has the numbers like the top few in the circuit, that's for sure. But I think we've got this race pretty well. I feel like we'd be fairly well sewn up with those four. I feel good about this sequence. We'll definitely dive in and put some tickets in and hopefully have some success. We've had some listeners have success lately following us, taking your own ideas, combining them with ours, and hitting stuff at various places. So hopefully that'll happen today at Saratoga. That just about wraps things up, but a little bit more housekeeping. I do want to give a shout out to another one of our local Saratoga friends, where we were the other day for our Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation viewing party at Walt and Whitman Brewery. I could definitely see going back there and watching some races more. They had a pretty good setup.
Yeah, they really did. I actually told one of our guys at OTB, Mick Richards. You've talked to him a lot. And I said to him the other day, I said, Mick, you got to check this place out because he's a big music guy. The artwork, the design. And obviously the beer and the food, but it was just a really cool venue, highly recommended. And if it's a hot summer day, we went inside at the kind of halfway point because it was getting a little steamy. It's the old Saratogian building, if you're not familiar with it, folks. That'd be Lake and Maple, maybe, or something like that.
That feels good. Yeah. Lake and Maple.
Kind of across the street from the police department, basically. I just happen to know that by the way.
Yeah, I was going to say your intimate knowledge of the geography of the Saratoga Police Department is probably a story for another time. But, yeah, the way I see it for me, drinking in Saratoga this summer, I'm coming here to the Brentwood when I'm feeling the cocktail thing. This little garden we're sitting in right now, absolutely gorgeous, ex the occasional traffic accident right in front of us. Very bucolic, I would even say. The horses walking by, etc. Great drinks. This was a rock-solid Bloody Mary that I've been enjoying during the course of the show. And then for beer, you have some good options, but Walton Whitman, for me, also just very, with the outdoor space and even the indoor space being very spread out, it's friendly for this time. And there's going to be more fun occasions and things to do to support the TRF this summer and also get a chance to hang out with the likes of us, if that's something that's interesting to you. And I'll tease this one. It's not official yet, but I think, And I don't know, you're going to be host because it's Saturday morning, but and you'll be working. But I think we're going to do something for Saturday morning workouts. One of those houses where the backyard faces Oklahoma.
On Fifth Avenue there?
Yes,
that's
right on
cool.
Fifth. I believe we have a line on this. I'm going to make the bloodies that day, and we'll bring in a bunch of bagels. We'll hang out for a couple hours. We'll handicapping session slash watch some morning workouts. Should be a lot of fun. More details to come on InTheMoneyPodcast.com, our Facebook page, Twitter, etc. But give folks the rundown, Brian, before we get out of here, on where they can get more of you, whether via Capital OTB or social media or anything you're doing anywhere in the world.
Yeah, I'm on. Well, we do every racing day on Capital OTB, and you can actually watch the shows live as well. If you go to the website, CapitalOTB.com, you'll see a media button. And in the morning, we're live from 9 to 10. And then my good buddy, and you know him well, Seth Merrill, does a show racing across America from 10 to 11. And he's got a lot of guests on. He had Ray Handel on the other day that tipped out that firster that knocked us around the other day. and so Seth does that Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And we do the handicappers report before that, giving picks to people, giving picks for the day's races. And then on Saturday, I host my own show that you were kind enough to join me on last week. Saturday's at the Spa. So, you know, yesterday we had Dave O'Rourke, president and CEO of NYRA. I had Kelly Breen as well. And then our good buddy Travis Stone, I've kind of introduced a little handicapping element to that this year. You talked about ABC ticket construction last week. Travis talked about yesterday trip notes, trip handicapping and stuff like that. So we're going to do that each and every week. And then, you know, Horse Player Now, we've got stuff going on, and I'm around. I'm previewing races for Teresa's. I'm still previewing the Triple Crown here in middle of July for Teresa Gennaro's Brooklyn Backstretch website, and all over the place. So things
love
are good.
It. Thank you for joining us today, my friend. Great having you and a chance to hang out. Thanks also to our friends at the Brentwood. Check it out. There's limited availability, but there is availability for this summer. So holler, mention us. I think you even get a discount when you do that. I can't recommend this place highly enough for both staying and coming for a cocktail. Check it out. And that's going to do it. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. Our business manager is Drew Cotney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos!